The first study we did in the series, in the family and dusty reality, was about dominion. And then this remained the focus for each subsequent study that we've done so far. We exist for God and His purposes, for His purposes for this world and what He wants to do and accomplish. And that is the only reason He has created everything in the beginning. And He hasn't changed from that purpose of why He created everything in the beginning and where it's headed to and what He's trying to accomplish. And God has made man from the beginning His vice regent, or deputy in the sense of being under God, in order to carry out God's purposes in this world for God's glory. So that's why man has been placed here. We saw that family is central to how God has ordained this to happen. So decentralized family units functioning and laboring for the kingdom is the way God has ordained his work to go forward in a major way. Because of this, we were reminded about how vital leadership is in the family. If the family is so fundamental, we've got to have leaders to guide it, and how important that is. And then we talked about last time how to strengthen that relationship with husband and wife relationship in order for the same dominion task and purpose. So tonight I'm going to continue to keep dominion in your sights as the goal. So it's important as believers to understand the significant role that sexuality plays in this dominion goal that we're talking about. Every aspect of sexuality must be viewed through the lens of dominion. That's what it's about. This is what it means. This is why it exists. And so when we're trying to understand its purpose, its meaning, and how we to relate to it, we've got to understand it with that same goal and vision. Dominion is the purpose of it. Without a proper understanding of sexuality, we truly hinder the family's effectiveness in this dominion objective. So now, what's the most obvious reason for sexuality? Okay, procreation. To fill the earth and subdue it is what God told Adam and Eve. So the family is a team that works together toward this goal of dominion, which is God's glory, His name being exalted. But the family is also on-the-job training school for an exponential explosion of other teams. It's really what we're doing. We're training other teams. And then this is going to explode. So what we do, we get our team into order, into kingdom-focused vision, dominion, purpose, and training and instructing it. But we've got to realize what we are actually doing here is this explosive thing. As our children leave and start their own families, there's this explosion and multiplication of teams, because they're exploding out of this family team into another team where there's a husband and wife, and there's going to get this other thing. So we've got this multiplication that really is an explosive force. It brings things into perspective about how we train, why we train, what am I actually doing, what am I trying to accomplish, what are the important things I've got to be getting into my family, what are we doing? You see, dominion is in your vision. It helps answer a lot of these questions as to why we're actually doing what we are doing. Training is not the point of my study tonight. That's purely just giving a reason of why we do what we do. The reason for having children is God's purpose behind the birth of a child. What's God's purpose behind the birth of this child? And so that's why we have a child, because we want to know what God, what's your purpose behind this child being born? What's your goal for it and purpose? And so then we get behind that. So as we read in Psalm 127 verses 3 through 5, "Behold, children are an heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So are children of one's youth. Happy is the man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." Now we know what the gate is. We know what that's talking about, speaking with their enemy in the gate. There's dominion here. If you can't see dominion in this verse, then you will not find dominion anywhere in the Bible. We're saying that. This is the goal. This is the purpose. Blessed is this man who has his quiver full, and this is what is going to happen. He's going to deal with God. And who's his enemies? It's obviously God's enemies as well, whoever is against the Lord. He's going to be dealing with his enemies in the gates, the places of authority, the places of rulership and leading. There's going to be this family purpose. How does this verse compare with the world's opinion, where you would have the ideal family is what? Perfect family is a boy and a girl. That's it. If you hit that together, that's it. Now that's a mindset that has influenced tremendously and continues to influence, and we've all bought into it possibly at some stage. Not everybody has bought into that, but some have bought into it unknowingly, unthinkingly, or just subconsciously. Sometimes you don't even realize why you've made your decisions, why we've thought about what is the purpose of a family and things like that. And usually the mindset that is used to promote the now unquestioned understanding of small families has been quality of life, the myth of overpopulation, And that is a myth. A more horrendous myth than the global warming myth, by the way, but still a myth nonetheless. I don't know if there's any others you can think of that are the reasons that we would focus upon that or buy into that mindset. Selfishness would be a very high one. Lack of food, lack of space. That's the overpopulation. That's usually the myth of overpopulation. There's just not enough food to support the people. But anyway, that myth of overpopulation is devoid of scientific support. A quote from Thomas Sowell is very appropriate in this context. He wasn't speaking about what I'm speaking about, but really his quote can be applied to practically every idea around today. He says, "It is one of the painful signs of our times that millions of people are so easily swayed by rhetoric that they show virtually no interest at all in finding out the hard facts." People are just, they just want to hear the rhetoric, and they hear it and they say, great, they don't want to check out the facts, what's really going on, what it really means. And they buy into whatever philosophy, whether it's an economic package, whether it's global warming, whether it's overpopulation, all those things. They buy into the rhetoric. Did you know that a manifestation of God's blessing upon people, that God is blessing them, a manifestation of the fact that He is blessing them, you know what that is? It's He gives you holy cows and holy sheep. Cows that are polite, they're not selfish, they're not violent, and they don't use bad language. You don't seem to be believing me. Have you never read your Bibles? I'm going to read to you from Deuteronomy 28. That's the great passage of blessing, where God pours out His blessings upon us. Deuteronomy 28. I've got to find it, or somebody else could find it before me. They could start reading. Okay, I found it. Verse 4. Okay, I'll read it just for the tape's sake. It's, "Blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, and the increase of your herds, the increase of your cattle, and the offspring of your flock." This is where this phrase, holy cow, comes from, actually. Most believers who translate this verse, they mean holy cows. Because if they were to be consistent with how they translate this verse, "Blessed shall be the fruit of thy body," they would have to translate the rest of it as a couple of holy cows. Not a herd, just two holy cows, possibly. Do you see how they would interpret that verse? "Blessed shall be the fruit of your body," and we take that blessedness in a way differently than we take it for "blessed will be your flocks." To be blessed in your flocks is to have an overflowing abundance of sheep or cows or whatever it is. That's a sign of God's blessing. And in the light of Psalm 127, we can see that same consistent idea coming out. So the small family mindset disregards God's definition of blessedness and in fact regards it as something to be avoided at all costs. So that is a mindset that is so prevalent in the thinking of the world that it's not questioned. The blessedness with my children is more holy children. They're going to be blessed in that sense. So that's why I'm saying, if you're going to interpret that verse in that way by saying that I'm going to have blessed children in the holiness sense, then let's apply it to the rest of the verse as well. As opposed to, because what God is saying there is my blessing is going to be that there will be great abundance. That's my point. Now I'm only touching on this important topic. I'm not going to major on that today because there's a predominant view in the world against understanding what children are for and understanding its purpose in relation to dominion and how that all ties together and what the importance is and things like that. So unless we truly stand on God's word and think about, you know, every subject and topic and say, okay, let's bring our thoughts into subjection to what the scriptures say, then we're going to be rushed along with the philosophy of this age and the mindset of this world, and we don't even realize we've imbibed a mindset that is against the scriptures, and we're all guilty of it in different areas in our lives because we've just imbibed a particular mindset about something, and we're getting dragged along, and we don't even know that this is an unbiblical way to think about the situation. So the importance of procreation in the whole plan of God's dominion is underlined very forcefully by something else. Something else. What do you think that is? This the importance of procreation in the whole plan of God is underlined to show that this indeed is an important thing. Something just very earthy. It's the human sexual drive. It underlines the importance of procreation. That this is an important aspect of the human being, and particularly of man's sexual drive. And where does that drive come from? God has created it, He has made it, and He has placed it there. So God has given it. It's a fundamental to being human. It is the norm unless God, for His purposes, removes that drive or something takes it away for some reason, which they are, we understand, we read, there are passages that talk about that. Jesus talked about that when he was speaking to his disciples and teaching them on divorce. They came to him and said, well, if it's so difficult to divorce, then it's better if a man doesn't marry. And Jesus says in Matthew 19:11, he says, all cannot accept the saying, but only to those whom it has been given. So it's not possible. The norm is that a man needs to get married, because God has placed this drive in there for this fundamental purpose of dominion. And procreation is an aspect of it. The sexual drive is universal, except for some exceptions. It can't be escaped from by man's ordering. Man can despise it, he can say this is a horrible thing or whatever, but he cannot get away from it. God has placed it there for his purposes and kingdom. So the sexual desire pushes a man toward marriage, because God said the only way to satisfy that desire is in the context of a marriage covenant with a woman. That's the only way. And that's what he's doing. So the desire is there, the sexual drive, and he's saying, okay, I'm directing you in a certain direction, to a certain end. This is the way it is going to be fulfilled. But you think about it. Even if you had a child every year, which would be very quick, and the whole process of procreation I'm talking about here, the sexual drive doesn't just happen, or the sexual desire doesn't just come about once a year. Now you've got this other dynamic in your thinking. Okay, now we've got to try and understand, how do we put this into the whole dominion mandate? Here we've got a desire that is far more constant than what you could possibly have once a year, having a child once a year. So you'd have this sexual desire once a year, like a lot of your animals have. Once a year they'll get together and conceive, and then that's it, and till next mating season. That's why you have the so-called mating season. The human is not like that. So you've got to be thinking, well, how does this play in? What is the purpose here? What is God doing in this drive? And Paul clearly understood the same thing in 1 Corinthians 7:5, that a husband and wife should not defraud one another in this area. And he uses a very strong word, they don't defraud each other from this activity. He said that you could agree to abstain for a season, for a short period, but then you need to come together again, so as not to fall into sin. So Paul is assuming here there's this constant sexual drive. So the sexual drive is fundamental to man's calling of dominion. I say that. Fundamental to something more than even just procreation. There's something far more important, not far more, but as important as procreation. And we see how it plays into the whole dominion picture and understanding of what God is doing. Women do not have the same kind of sexual drive. You need to realize that. They do not have this. And I'll touch upon their sexuality a bit later. But a woman's sexuality is different from a man's. What this means, therefore, is that unless a woman understands a man's sexual drive, then it's this foreign language that has been spoken. Something that is completely foreign to her own experience and her own understanding, just naturally speaking. It's very different. And so it's an important understanding to have. A lady has no real perception of how critical and integral her husband's sexual drive is to the whole of his dominion calling. I don't think she can perceive that and realize it. And it's something that needs to be communicated and understood. Not just to the aspect of procreating. This drive remains central even when children are not being conceived. It remains integral to the whole dominion work. It's core to that whole work. In other words, to everything that the man does. To everything that a man does, his sexuality and the sexual drive takes an incredibly important position and place. We're talking about the godly man who is seeking to advance the kingdom. Okay, we're not talking about I'm not saying that doesn't apply to them as well. It does. I'm just talking about what is motivating this man's heart and desires. So the sexual desire is constantly there and it needs to be satisfied. And God has made it like that. And so now we've got to step back and we've got to understand, well, what is the purpose of this? Okay, so remember who set this drive up. The Lord has set it up. Sexual drive is not a suggestion. It's an imperative. What I mean by that is it's not something you escape from. It's not something you can get away from. Unless the Lord removes that desire or gives special grace to someone to ignore it for whatever reason or period or season, it has to be satisfied. That's how God has ordained it. So the desire builds and increases. A man doesn't have to think sexual thoughts in order to have a sexual desire. Do you know that? It's something that is there. It is something that is in his body and his system. He is moving in that direction. So he doesn't have to be even trying to entertain sexual thoughts to be aware of that sexual desire. And it increases. And it's increasing to a point, and you need to satisfy that desire. And when sexuality is not satisfied, you have an incredibly negative response. It has an impact upon the whole of his dominion work. So you see the cornice of the sexual sexuality. If sexuality is something that is not being satisfied and fulfilled, it affects the whole of a man's dominion. What the fall brings in to the sexuality is the perversion of it, but the actual drive is godly and good, and there's one purpose and one way that it is satisfied, and keeping that purpose and way in focus, which I hope will come clearer as we move on, becomes an incredible way to direct that drive. It gives us the direction for that drive, but it is a good thing, and it needs to be understood in order to be harnessed. Okay, when that sexual drive is not satisfied, this internal tension and frustration within the man, which distracts his focus from all his work. His focus is distracted. Women don't have this desire or drive, and thus they cannot know unless it's explained to them. Like, this is actually what is taking place, because to their understanding, this is not part of their dynamic. When that frustration is present, you've got a hindering of the dominion mandate, because the work that is the man is doing is frustrated. That's the one danger against the dominion mandate, is the frustration distracting from it. The other danger is a lot more obvious, and that's temptation to fall into sin. It becomes an issue where the man is then distracted in a radical way from his dominion mandate and can end up in all kinds of mess. So this desire is always there and keeps a perpetual cycle of increasing intensity until it's satisfied, and then it starts to build again. You have to understand that that's how God has made man. That's how he has made the man's physical and biological working. That's his sexual nature. That's what it looks like. That's just how it is. And God has then designed how this whole process takes place. So when this isn't understood, great turmoil can be brought into the family due to ignorance about this drive. Now, this drive can be scoffed at, can be demeaned, and it is. It can be ridiculed. It can be regarded as something that's animalistic. There are degrading jokes about it. The degrading jokes about many aspects of sexuality. Many have adopted to some degree the impression that the drive is more animalistic rather than human, or maybe coming from the sinful aspect of man's being. And so you've got this perception and mindset towards sexuality, towards this drive that is very real, and you're thinking, well, how do I interpret it? How do I relate to it and associate with it? And how am I supposed to deal with it? And it becomes this tremendous tension unless we understand what God has basically done or given to us. Then you can become apologetic for the drive. You can become apologetic for sexuality and deal with that in different ways, whether it's kind of locking it away in a back room of your mind or trying to do that anyway. And merely resign yourself to sexual frustration and lack of productivity. But this is hindering the work of dominion, because integral to man's dominion task is the satisfying of this sexual drive. This is God's design. So it's vital that Christian wives can come to understand this and embrace the sexuality of their husbands. It's an important understanding. It really is. And unfortunately, it's not something that is often discussed and talked about, this, what the drive is and how it manifests itself and how it should be handled within the marriage. It's important that our wives understand the husband's sexuality and commit themselves to his dominion calling through their sexual union. So a godly man's effectiveness will be greatly reduced if he's living a life that is in great frustration in this way. So if a wife reacts to the statement, it's because her thinking has been influenced by the thinking of the world. Mary Baker Eddy, I think I've said this before, she had the most demeaning perception of man's sexuality. She used to talk about not giving men meat and stuff because changing their diet in order to get him away from this animal instinct of sexuality. So you've got this understanding and it permeates the mind, the thinking, the understanding. And so all you've got now in this, at the core of the covenant movement of God, which is the husband-wife relationship, where you're producing these family teams and this impact for the kingdom, you've got this tremendous unsettled tension and frustration. And often people don't even realize what's going on. They don't understand it. They can't begin to get to grips with it. It just creates this sluggishness and inability in the moving forward of the kingdom. So a wife really needs to understand that and realize if she reacts to that statement, this is basically what I'm trying to say, if in her heart, if she reacts to that, what she needs to realize is that my mind has been infiltrated by the thinking of the world. Whatever the background is and the baggage is that she's brought with her to the marriage, it's been an unbiblical perspective on sexuality. And there's a lot of that, and that's why it's such a vital aspect when we're training our children to give them a biblical sound understanding of sexuality. Now, a woman's sexuality is very different, and that's why there's this huge potential for misunderstanding on both sides. As I've said, she doesn't have this growing internal desire like a man has. She doesn't know what this desire feels like. She can't identify with it. To her, it's foreign. Elise will still sometimes say to me, describe it to me. She'll shake her head and say, yeah, you're speaking French. It's foreign to her. It's not something that's part of her physiology. And so it's a foreign understanding. Because it's foreign to a person's experience, it's difficult for them to appreciate what it actually is like for a man. So this doesn't mean women don't enjoy sexual intimacy. They do. But what I'm pointing out is that their sexuality has a different ignition point. It's something very different to the man's. With a man, the desire is there. With a woman, it's ignited by something else. The wife wants to connect with her husband. The husband, he wants to sexually go into his wife. He wants to connect with her sexually. The wife wants to connect with her husband emotionally. That's what she wants. She wants to enter into his heart. That's what she's trying to do. That's what she's reaching out for. She wants to get into his heart. And the wife needs this connection with his heart like the husband needs to satisfy his sexual desire. He needs it satisfied and she needs it. She needs to make contact with his heart. The world says that what a woman wants is romance. And then you have the Valentine's kind of stuff. Candlelight dinners, flowers, romantic settings. That's how the world portrays this need that women have. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a candlelight dinner and going away to a nice place for that kind of a purpose. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I'm suggesting to you that in many respects, I don't even think a godly woman necessarily even desires that. They aren't looking for that either, I don't believe. That's not what they're passionate about. They really aren't. Now I realize I might have just stepped into some hot soup because you're going to cancel your romantic dinner with your wife and say, well, Derek said that this is not important. So, and I get all these looks and when I walk into church, I know it. She wants to be, like I said, in our heart. And this is not a self-serving desire. That's not what she's looking for. She's not looking to be put on a pedestal and, oh, you're just the most wonderful. I don't believe that's what she's looking for. I think it's good to encourage and to say, how much we appreciate them, the stuff they do and really, but that's not fundamentally what she's looking for. I believe her desire is a kingdom dominion desire. It really is. A godly woman who understands. That's what her desire is, has a dominion focus. I'm trying to explain. A woman wants a godly man who is sold out on working for the Lord, kingdom dominion. I truly believe that's what she wants. That is where her passion is. I'm convinced of this. The reason you find so many godly women volunteering for different benevolence things and helping this charity or wanting to do that is because they want to be involved with purpose and meaning and accomplishing something, and they'll have this time on their hands and feel that there's nothing else much going on, and so they give themselves into these kinds of works. I'm not saying this is right. I'm just pointing out that's what they do. What a godly woman wants is to be involved in meaningful dominion work with her husband, to be his helper in his kingdom-focused labor and vision. She wants to feel needed for this work. She wants to stand with her husband to support him in this work, to be guided and directed in this work, to see where the vision is going. She wants to know what motivates him and what and why he's doing what he is doing. She wants to champion a cause, her husband's cause. She wants to get behind it. She wants to make a difference. And that's the connection she is looking for into her husband's heart. And it's a bigger picture than herself. Not into her husband's heart so that he can say sweet little Romeo and Juliet poetry to each other. That's not what she's looking for. She's looking for purpose and meaning, but flowing from her standing with him and alongside him and working together. So that doing what he is doing, she wants to champion her husband's cause. And you'll see that sometimes some wives in desperation will even champion their husband's cause behind the bears or something. As pathetic as that is, they want to support something and get there with him. That's the connection. I want to connect with him. Whatever he's doing, I want to be joined with him in his goal and his purpose. And what he finds energizing, what drives him, I want to be connected to that. The wife wants to be in her husband's heart with respect to his kingdom vision and know him in this vision and help him in it. When he shares his heart with her about these things and leads down this path, I believe that is real passion for a wife. That's where her sexuality is triggered, that passion and real purpose she finds meaning, and that is where this union is fulfilled. That is the oneness that satisfies her deep desire and longing. When this kind of heart connection is not happening, she finds it extremely frustrating and is unfulfilled. And when a man has no real dominion in his sights and is not taking his family down the dominion path, he has no idea how difficult that is for his wife. Even as she has no idea how difficult it is sexually for him not to be sexually satisfied, she has no idea about that. So the man cannot understand, why is this so? I mean, can't you just chill out? Let's watch another game. In her, there's not the connection. I believe the connection can be through this vision. I believe it's a dominion-oriented thing on both sides. The man's dominion goal, his work is hindered, and the wife's dominion goal. She's very frustrated if there isn't that there. So the man needs to and wants to enter his wife sexually. She wants to enter into his heart. So you've got the same thing going on. Likewise, a man is much more physical. He likes to see his wife naked. The wife is not really interested in seeing her husband naked. You know what she wants to see? Into his heart. She wants to get in there and say, well, what's going on here? What are your passions? What are you desiring? What are we doing? Where are we going? What are we going to accomplish? So the husband and wife's sexuality or dominion focused, I believe, integral to dominion. And if we understand that, we can see how we can serve each other and how we can really make that union something that is very powerful. There's another important subject or area revolved to that, and that is, what about a young unmarried man? How does this all fit into the young guys who are not yet married? They're waiting for marriage to come. So while there's no set time when puberty sets in, there's no set age. Well, you've reached a certain age, you should be going into puberty at a wide range of ages. But with the onset of puberty, all the hormones that are bringing that about are the hormones that produce sexual desire. And so that starts to increase. So you've got this increasing now as you reach the term of puberty, and it's increasing and it continues to increase as you become more and more mature. Just all that puberty means is you becoming sexually mature. And that desire continues until you're fully developed. And then the desire doesn't stop. It stays there. So now how do we put that in? Now where do we put that? Why did God do that? It was unkind. Or we deny it. Or we pretend it's not there. We just hope on. I hope my kid doesn't have sexual desires. What do you do with it? So we need to understand it from a biblical perspective. So fundamentally, first of all, the desire is a clear indicator of something. God's preparing you for marriage. He's pushing you in that direction. How do I know I want to get married? Well, very, very dusty indicator. If you have sexual desire, that's God's indicator that, yes, He's lining you up for marriage. Now, what's the focus of your sexual desire at that stage? It doesn't change at any stage, but what's the focus? Dominion. And you say, okay, I've got this desire. What is its purpose? Dominion. Dominion is what it's about. Now, what does that mean? What does it look like for me? At this stage, in my preparation, my age, wherever I am, what does it look like? Basically, to do God's will. Okay, I'm doing God's will. I want to do God's will. Now, I've got this indicator. What's the indicator? The indicator is that to do God's will, this dominion calling, I'm starting to see a little bit of shape taking place. And that picture that's taking place is saying, I kind of see a little bit clearer now that my dominion is probably going to be through family, my dominion work. That's going to be a fundamental aspect of my calling. I've got this desire. God says there's only one way to satisfy that desire. Therefore, I'm starting to think it's getting a little bit clearer. I can see now family in my dominion work. Okay, so I'm still preparing for that dominion work. So now what's the next step? Because you're part of a team already. So you need to be preparing effectively for that. So, okay, I'm part of a team working in dominion, my father's household. But part of that preparation and part of my father's dominion calling is preparing me for the next step. So the dad's preparing the son for the next step, which is his own family. And so the son's vision and purpose, while he's serving with his dad and serving his dad's vision and purpose there in that family where he's part of, they're also looking beyond that and saying, okay, now we're looking to the next step for you, and that means you're going to have dominion in your family, and this is what it's going to look like. Okay, so what needs to be done, and how does preparation need to take place so that we can move down that path? So until you leave your home, leave your father's home and get married, you're part of his team, but you're also being equipped for the next step. So expend all your energy in this work, all your energy preparing. What am I preparing for? Dominion. Okay, dominion through the family. What does that look like? It looks like, okay, I need to provide for the family. I need certain resources. I need certain things. I need to be planning. I need to start saving towards the requirements that I need, whether I'm working, whether I'm, whatever it is. And it's multifaceted. I'm not trying to lay out the steps that you take. That's what you're doing. You're always getting ready, and deflect your sexual desire and drive into that work. Deflect it into the energy and the labor and the planning and getting ready. That's where you turn it. I believe you can, and I believe that's how God intends it. You can turn that sexual drive and desire into energy, into work, and laboring to do the preparation that is the dominion calling. Always praying and asking the Lord to keep you sexually pure for your wife. But you can also deflect that desire into praying specifically for your wife, because that desire is there, and you know, this. What's this desire? Oh, sexuality. Okay, what's its purpose? Marriage. How does that all fit in? Dominion. Okay, I need a wife. Oh God, I pray for my wife right now. I've never seen her. I don't even know where she lives. I don't even know anything about her. But I know you've got a wife for me. And I pray for her, Lord. I pray that you prepare her. You get her. Pray that you pray for her parents. You've never met her parents. Pray for her parents. Say, Lord, I pray that they are training her and instructing her in these dominion, that there's the same vision and purpose so that we can be productive. And so you're channeling that desire by God's grace into this preparation, preparing how you to be equipped for her. Equip yourself for that as well. You don't have to give in to sexual temptation. That's something that you need to underline in your mind with bold underlining. You do not need to give in to it. God has made a way for us to deal with that at every stage of our lives. Sexual release, other than through the covenant of marriage, deflects you from your effective dominion work. It deflects you. It removes your direction, removes you from the path that God has placed you upon. So don't allow it to deflect you. It sidetracks you and trips you up. Learn self-control. Oh, this desire. What? Control. Lord, give me grace. Learn what it means to be a man and stand on principle. Stand with self-control and say, I'm going to stand on this. I know I'm going to cry out to the Lord for His grace, but I'm going to stand. I'm going to stand strong for this purpose. It's dominion. Can you see that the whole time you're keeping in front of your mind what is going on and why you're doing it? And then you're living according to those lights. So stand strong upon principle in the real dusty struggles of life, because they're not going to end. The dusty struggles of life are going to be with you all the days that you're growing up, all the days through your married life, your whole life. It's going to be there, and you can learn how to stand even now as you look at dominion, as you're waiting for that wonderful day when you'll be joined with your wife. So do you see how valuable sexual desire is when you understand it in the light of God's dominion? Points you to your calling. And when your knowledge about all things comes from God's word, you can say, okay, I understand this unknown thing, or this thing I pretend doesn't exist. I embrace it. I embrace it from the Lord. I know it's from Him. And He has given me the grace, and He will give me the grace. So we can understand the meaning of our sexuality and how it is to be channeled and used. So as fathers, we need to be comfortable with such subjects. It's something that our upbringing was something that was kind of just in the back room. Everybody knew about it, but that's where it stayed. And it was never open discussion and comfortable discussion. Now, there would be a joke every now and again and a comment and a snide remark, but it was never discussed in the openness and the glory that it should be discussed in, because it's something that God has given, and it's something that we need to understand in that light. It's vital for the next generation, as we are preparing our children, it's vital that the next generation starts their marriages with a solidly biblical view of this topic. It's absolutely vital that they understand what this is about. They need to understand their sexuality in the light of God's word and not be embarrassed about it. So as dads, we need to have the lead on this. We need to move down that path and begin in whatever level our family's at, and how are we going to do that. But we need to be bringing a certain amount of comfort in discussing these things, so that there's trust building and dependence and dependability and stuff. Even as young folk, you can help your dads. It's good to help them get comfortable with it, because their whole upbringing and experience and background might be one of being a very uncomfortable subject. So you can assist in that way as well. Talk about the subject in a God-glorifying way. And reject words that undermine. That's what's wrong with swear words that undermine these things. It's because it's demeaning something that is incredibly precious and fundamental to the kingdom. And those swear words are jokes and things that demean sexuality and sexual activities or sexual drive or anything like that. What they're doing is putting in people's mind a completely opposite picture of what it should be. And that's a lot of that adds to the phobias and misperceptions in the minds of people. So that's why we stay away from those things. That's why we don't demean and use those kinds of words, because it's attacking something that we hold to be precious and given to us by God and vital for His kingdom. Jokes and snide comments and filthy language are designed to undermine this. That's what it is. It's going to undermine God's pattern for sex. So openness needs to be nurtured and cultivated. And then when the time, we need to do it before our children reach marriage, because by that stage, we want an openness with them that we can then impart a lot more information and knowledge and stuff. You know, every married couple, you see this married couple coming together, and you think, you know, they're going in there and they're starting at the bottom. They're not going in with any knowledge. Everybody's reinventing the wheel. Every time another marriage begins, they're going to start at the same place, struggling and sputtering. And we need to be thinking of how we can pass on to the next generation. And the only way we can pass on is if we have a comfort relationship. And then when marriage time comes, we can sit down with them and instruct in a much more deep and intimate way some of the finer aspects of this important and vital aspect of dominion. So dominion and sexuality are inseparable. Thus, when we understand dominion, we will reform our thinking of sexuality. We'll reform it and think, okay, this needs to change. Our thinking is wrong here. We need to understand it correctly. So if we can understand those two aspects, what a man's sexuality is and where it comes from and how we need to honor that and respect it and accept it and appreciate it. I'm not talking about abuse and becoming a tyrant with it, but at the same time, it's got to be something that is appreciated for what it is, and from the woman's perspective, she needs to understand her husband's sexuality, and then it's vital the man understands what truly is makes a wife passionate and joins her with his heart, which is, that's the time when a wife is sexually intimate with her husband. She wants her heart to be connected, and that's how the heart is connected with its vision and purpose and calling. So I hope that's been helpful in just trying to deal with those two areas. There's much that can be said on the subject, but in my thinking, those are two key points that are in the dusty realm that if we can communicate that, if we can help our wives to see it, we can instruct our daughters, train our sons as well.